And that also raises the issue of the challenge of philanthropy, which has really undergone some major changes, whether it's certainly the pool from which these donors are coming, and also their desires now seeming to really be focused more on changing the world, on social causes, activist causes. Where do you see the role of philanthropy and how opera companies can work and adapt with that given the current landscape?
I think that opera companies have to be able to articulate why it is that they exist and who they serve and why their art matters. And I think that you can do that. I think that the thing that you can't do is say, oh, we're a legacy company and we're really important and so you should just give us money. That will basically get you nowhere. Some people who love these companies and believe in them and still think that, you know, legacy arts institutions are worth supporting, and God bless them. I mean, that's so wonderful that they still do. But the new generation of philanthropists is going to need a different kind of pitch to make them want to support you. And so if you can demonstrate to those people why it is that your company matters and who you serve and what it is about this art form that makes it worth preserving and renewing and bringing to as many people as you possibly can, then you have a shot.
It also seems that one of the things earlier on that really kept New York City Opera together and going was this sense of family, the personal connection that the people involved had. Is that still playing a role in the medium or larger size opera companies or in the arts in general, or is that less of a draw and a pull to keep things cohesive?
That's a really interesting question, because the City Opera family sort of story is something that you come across, you know, really all the time. Like all these people who work there, and they're now, you know, like spread all over the country and working in different places, and yet they're all sort of on this, on this Facebook group, and they all talk to each other, and you know, there's this sense of being like the alumni of City Opera. And I mean, from what people have told me, there is in fact some of that cohesion exists in some other opera companies, but I think perhaps not to the degree that it did in City Opera. I think that there were some people I talked to, I guess it was maybe Corey Ellison who said it, that and Mark Skorka also, he said that, you know, like we were working so hard, and you know, I think it was Mark who said that there was a human deficit, because people worked so hard with so few resources in order to, like, you know, let's put on the show, and we can put on the show with nothing, and look how great we are, we can do this, that there's a real sense of of camaraderie that comes about when you have that kind of an experience. I think that, you know, like any institution where you have dynamic leadership and people who, and you know, a person or people who will bring the rank and file, both artists and administrators and like everybody involved in it, to feel that there is a reason for this institution to exist, and we're all part of it, and we want it to continue. I see no reason why other kind of arts institutions can't be that way, even if they aren't sort of trying to like put on shows in barns with no money.
And now as an arts writer and also a New Yorker, the New York City Opera did kind of weave itself through your life in different ways. What would you say are your best or most prominent memories about the opera?
Well, there are certainly, there are a lot of them. I actually met my husband at the New York City Opera. That was really quite something. We were both at a performance of the Macropolis case, and I was in standing room, and he had an extra seat, and I was at intermission, standing at the edge of the on the ground level, looking, hoping that the people had left because it was in the Micropolis case, and that somebody would that I could, you know, like sneak in and get a seat. And this was when, of course, it was a continental seating, and you couldn't really sort of sneak into the middle because if that person came and took their seat, you were just like, you were out of luck. And I was just about getting ready to go back up to the top of the house where my spot was when a young man came up to me and said, "Oh, you look like you're looking for a seat." And I said, "Well, yes, I am. And don't I know you?" And he said, "No." He was like, "No." But it turned out we did know each other. We were we had gone to high school together, and that was sort of like the beginning of a very long relationship, and we are still married. So that was a pretty big deal. And things that I saw there, I mean, the cunning little vixen, one of the great sort of like most moving operas I had ever seen, so sad and touching. In the more recent period, Xerxes, the Stephen Wadsworth production of Xerxes, which sort of made Handel into one of the most theatrical kinds of, operatic performances that you could possibly imagine. There are a lot of them.